Spectrum Business works with small businesses nationwide, so we know that running your own business means doing it all. Marketing, sales, inventory, customer service, and more. Spectrum One for Business helps you keep it all connected for just $49.99 a month. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with Security Shield, and a free mobile line for one low price. Stay connected and do it all with Spectrum One for Business. Only $49.99 a month. Go to spectrum.com/business to learn more. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I mean, what's Pro Football Focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
As a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFL.
Ready to get into it?
Yeah.
All right. We're going team by team.
I would be very careful about slinging stuff.
Am I going to get sued?
We got legal on this?
I like football. I like football season and all the things that go with it.
Welcome in to the PFF NFL Podcast. Steve Pell is all of Sam Monson. We are live on YouTube from a hotel room down in Nashville.
A little echoey in here.
No. Can they tell? Loud. Does it sound echoey?
God, I hope there's nobody.
I think it sounds great.
I hope there's nobody in the next rooms.
Yeah, that would be bad if there were people next door. But they would get a free preview of the show, which is live but recorded yesterday. We're in Nashville. We're checking out Titans camp. We're going to have a full report on Titans camp.
Ish. Yeah.
Well, yeah, they didn't let us talk about much. Can't take pictures, can't talk about formations or plays. Other than that, though, we can report from Titans camp.
You can record and report from sessions 1, 3, 4, 5, and 6, which are all warm-ups.
Yes.
Anything else, not so much.
All right, before we get into deep dive into Titans camp, remember, as a parent, you've had to learn so many new skills to provide for your family, how to do copious amounts of laundry, meal plan for even the pickiest eater, and now, I know how to do that. How to protect your family's financial future. Fabric by Gerber Life provides an easy one-stop shop for your family and their financial needs, offering high-quality term life insurance policies plus other financial solutions in one easy online hub. Fabric was designed by parents for parents to help you get a high-quality, surprisingly affordable term life insurance policy in less than 10 minutes. Fabric has flexible policies that fit your family and your budget with quality policies like $1 million in coverage for less than a dollar a day. Get your personalized quote in just minutes and then apply when it's convenient for you. It's all online and on your schedule. You can go from start to covered in less than 10 minutes with no health exam required. So join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to protect their family. Apply today in just minutes at meetfabric.com/PFFNFL. That's meetfabric.com/PFFNFL. M-E-E-T, fabric.com/PFFNFL. Policies issued by Western Southern Life Insurance Company, not available in certain states. Prices subject to underwriting and health questions. All right, Sam, we did get to go to Titans camp. We were going to see the Patriots. They came in. They were going to come in and do two joint practices. We were ready for that. It got canceled this week. But the Titans ended up doing a little scrimmaging on their own, and we came down anyway to check it out. Like we said, they're, you know, a lot of times at camp, they're sticklers for what you can discuss and not discuss, but some plays were run. There was some good stuff by the offense and some good stuff by the defense.
Yeah, they kind of
vice versa.
They kind of set themselves up a little intra-squad scrimmage. You know, no Patriots coming to town, so they did it internally, and they kind of divided up the roster, whites and blues, and mixed and matched in terms of, so it wasn't just the first string going up against the second string. It was a little bit of everything across the board. And that was the practice today. So it was kind of a good one to show up to.
There was no Will Levis. So we did get to see a lot of Ryan Tannehill and Malik Willis. They were running the two teams. We saw plenty of DeAndre Hopkins.
Mm-hmm.
And because there were other reports out there from Jeff Howe, I believe of The Athletic, Jeff Howe saying that DeAndre Hopkins caught everything his way. It wasn't everything his way, but there was several contested catches.
Caught a lot. Not everything. There was at least one pass broken up in the end zone. But yeah, so it's not everything. You know, it's not. Words have meaning, and that's not the correct meaning.
The other thing that's tough to glean, we mentioned with the Malik Willis analysis coming out of the games the other day, you know, making plays within the flow of the offense. The other night against Minnesota, he had 11 carries and 10 completions. We saw a little bit of that today where there were a lot of plays that may have been blown dead or he was going to get sacked in a real game situation. Still looking for some of that within the flow of the offense improvement for Willis here.
Yeah, the Willis thing didn't look great today. It actually started off pretty well. And I don't just mean the warm-ups where he was targeting a stationary net, where he did outperform Tannehill, by the way. Tannehill was it like 2 of 8 hitting the net with the 3 buckets in it?
What are you judging that by? Like how many actual he got?
How many went into the hole?
Yeah, that's fine.
He was shouting at himself for missing it. One of them, he clanged off like the perimeter, like the scaffolding surrounding the thing. Malik Willis was much more accurate on those. Then we got to some more, you know, football relevant drills. And right at the start, actually, Malik Willis was doing quite well. When it was in rhythm, like within the structure of the offense, he actually was hitting the right guy. Was, again, kind of outperforming Tannehill right at the start. And then it started to get away pretty badly. And that's when I think the offensive line was struggling for both teams, actually, both sides, was giving up a lot of pressure. Tannehill dealt with that a lot better than Willis did. And then on top of the offensive line sort of becoming a problem, I think Willis then dug that hole deeper by the way he tends to naturally play the game, which is hold onto the ball, you know, kind of make it worse. So you had a bad offensive line already hemorrhaging pressure, and then Willis kind of making everything worse in that regard by holding onto the ball. And it's like, this is just not functioning. And then when he's under pressure, he's playing worse as well. So the whole thing was just like a death spiral in terms of his side.
We were warned ahead of time, though, because it's an intra-squad scrimmage. You're right. Going to get a lot of players playing out of position. And as we know from the preseason, there's no position of, you know, there's no backup position that gets hit worse than the offensive line. So it's not a fair assessment to just say, oh, the Titans were struggling on their offensive line. They have guys on the, you know, left tackles playing right tackle and vice versa. They had players all over the place. So that is a bit of a challenge in those settings.
But the flip side of that is it also meant that neither one of them was going up against like the first team defense. You know what I mean?
True.
Like maybe there's definitely a case that in this scenario, the offensive line would be hit harder than the defensive line by being mixed up and, you know, shuffled and first team and second team guys all together and guys out of position, all that kind of thing. I think it's definitely true that both offensive lines would have had more problems than the respective defensive lines in that scenario. But it did mean that you never had a situation where like first team defensive line was just beating up on the second team offensive line. Like it wasn't quite that simple. So overall, I think even though you can definitely look at it and say, look, mitigating circumstances, weird arrangement, the way they were doing it, the offensive line wasn't good. And remember, they finished last season as the 32nd ranked offensive line in the NFL. They've made some improvements this offseason. Some of them on paper didn't look great anyway. Just generally, that looks like it's going to be an issue. Again, like this is based off one practice.
Yeah, we know. We're not going to completely overrate that. I'll say I think I'm intrigued by the secondary and some of the players and the versatility there. I think adding Sean Murphy Bunting in this year to go to the Kevin Byard, Imani Hooker, and Elijah Molden, these safety hybrid slot players, Christian Fulton, Roger McCreary, and our condolences to Caleb Farley, who wasn't at practice today. His father passed away in a house fire back in North Carolina. That was just as we recorded this morning, but intriguing secondary here for the Tennessee Titans. They'll be a part of our full season preview for the AFC and the NFC South coming sometime within a week. We still have to preview the Souths. Mm-hmm. Anything else on practice here today?
No, I mean, there's, you know, little bits and pieces. Like, I think those are the main takeaways overall. Struggling offensive line, struggling Malik Willis. Tannehill, I thought, warmed up as the session went along. Like, again, didn't start great, both in terms of hitting a net and in terms of actually hitting receivers. But then kind of got into a groove. And when, you know, the end, when they're doing 2-minute drill, all that kind of stuff, Tannehill actually looked pretty comfortable. You can tell they're going to be going after Nuke Hopkins already. Like, he hasn't been there that long, and already he's clearly, you know, the number one target there.
Careful.
That's not against the rules.
It's borderline. This is borderline here.
You can tell he's going to be the number one target there. I thought Roger McCreary, who was going up against him a lot, did a good job, actually. Didn't always win, but was giving as good as he got, and then, you know, you lose out because it's Nuke Hopkins.
That's McCreary. He's going to be there. He's going to be close in tight coverage. So that's Titans camp. We might go back again tomorrow. We'll see. Talk to them. See how good. See how competitive it's going to be. We might be there right now, live here on YouTube. You want to do Monday Night Football?
Okay.
A little post-mortem. Rest in peace.
The streak is over.
The Ravens 24-game preseason streak. You and I both became...
By 1 point.
I mean, it started with a... Their last loss was a 1-point loss.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've basically still never lost.
And this was
win by two.
Like they were doing well. They had the lead. They were about to score another touchdown. Then that stupid bounce pick thing, and that's where the wheels started to fall off.
We were. I thought the Q Blue Kelly. I'm there now.
Nice.
Made what I thought was maybe the most important tackle in maybe preseason history. All of preseason history. He made the tackle on the pass to the flat on a 2-point conversion to tie the game. Looked like it was wide open and boom, makes the play. But didn't matter. You and I both became strangely invested into this entire the streak, but it's now over.
The longest one in NFL history, by the way. They did a bunch of stuff about it at the top of the show yesterday. The previous longest one in NFL history, I think, was 19 games or something. So they were already like plus five on the longest streak in NFL history. The longest current active streak now is six. So they were like more than three times bigger than any, like four times. Just a nutty, absolutely ridiculous streak. And as we said, like... It's basically blind ass luck to get to a streak like that. Sure, you can focus on some things and depth is important and all this kind of stuff, but you need to get lucky a bunch of times for that to exist.
All right, actual football news coming out of there. Not to diminish the streak. It was a lot of fun. Sam Howell looking pretty good. And then Terry McLaurin comes out of the game. Toe injury. It's diagnosed as turf toe. X-rays negative. But depending on the severity of it, it either puts the beginning of the season in jeopardy or... Just a general one of those nagging injuries. I'm not saying that's worse than one that's like, hey, you're out 8 weeks, but the nagging injury, 17-game schedule that could pop up, and that is huge for this Washington team because Howell was looking really good in the pass game. A lot of production out of Jahan Dotson, and they've got some weapons when Terry McLaurin is sitting there as the number one wide receiver, and that could be an issue here.
Yeah, and anytime you hear, you know, turf toe, it's one of those injuries that feels like it tends to linger quite a while. So definitely not good. A little bit of a concern there for Washington. But overall, like Sam Howell looks quite impressive. With the one caveat / exception that he's still a sack magnet. Like sacks just seem to find him. It's either plays where he sort of invites trouble. Like there was one ridiculous play where he's trying to run around the backfield. It just keeps backing up and back. You know, those plays that young quarterbacks tend to make where they keep just losing more and more ground and then eventually give up and you've now lost 15 when it should have been 7 or whatever. He had one of those. There was a blown protection, which actually not a blown protection, a free runner that shouldn't have been there because they had the bodies to pick it up, but the protection was not called to pick it up. I don't know if that's on Sam Howell or if that's on, you know, the blockers themselves, but It feels like a high-level quarterback needs to see that coming, and he had no idea until he was blindsided by the guy. So I'm sort of quietly optimistic that I think Sam Howell overall is going to look like quite a good quarterback, but that's a big negative part of his game right now, where even if he looks good, he's chewing up a giant chunk of negative plays with those sacks.
Yeah, and that might not pair well with the offensive line. I know we already previewed the NFC East and the Washington Commanders, but their offensive line this year has been, you know, the talk of Washington camp, and is it good enough? Are there improvements to still be made there? Charles Leno at left tackle, who we've always said is your dead smack average offensive tackle, which I think is a valuable position, but sometimes when you run up against better players, it's trouble. Andrew Wiley at right tackle, kind of similar. They're bringing him in. He had a 62 pass block grade last year. Sadiq Charles, scheduled to play left guard. He had a 29 pass blocking grade last year. So there are going to be some questions up front for Washington. If they can at least be average there, though, and if Terry McLaurin's healthy, to go with Dotson, Curtis Samuel, De'Ami Brown had a nice touchdown the other day. I mean, I like the pass catchers there, but it's a lot of those what ifs, making sure that if Howell's going to invite pressure, that's going to look even worse if the offensive line is, you know, below average as well.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't look like an offensive line that's in a tremendously good shape either, which is not going to help with that tendency of Sam Howell to have issues with pressure.
Howell, in particular, I do believe, just watching him this year, a guy that only started one game last year, was a fifth-round pick, former projected first-rounder, for whatever that's worth, watching guys like him, watching guys like Desmond Ridder, who were mid-round picks, that teams have said, we're rolling with these guys. Or even a Jordan Love in a slightly different situation, a guy that sat there and had to wait for 3 years, former first-rounder. To me, those are some of the more intriguing storylines, though, for the season, seeing these unproven quarterbacks who have a little bit of experience under their belt, and then just seeing like a team, you know, Washington specifically didn't go get somebody. Atlanta yeah. specifically didn't go get somebody. And of course, Green Bay said, Jordan Love, you're our guy post Aaron Rodgers here.
Yeah, I mean, the Ridder thing, like, Ridder's a high enough pick where those guys do get a shot sometimes. The Sam Howell one, though, is really intriguing because fifth round picks just do not get given starting opportunities. And by that, I mean, like you said, they said very early in the offseason, Sam Howell's the guy, essentially. It seemed completely nonsensical. It sounded like nonsense at the time, where when they were interviewing offensive coordinator candidates, they were basically telling them, like, Sam Howell's the guy, so give me what you got. Like, what's your plan to make this work, understanding that this is going to be the situation? We're not going to go draft a guy. We're not going to go, you know, bring somebody in. You need to tailor an offense to this dude, this fifth round pick from a year ago. It sounded crazy at the time. And then the more the offseason went through, the more it was pretty clear that does appear to be what they're going with. Jacoby Brissett being signed, I think, was really just a rubber stamp on that. Great idea. You know, you bring in Jacoby Brissett as a really good backup. Nobody brings in Jacoby Brissett with the idea that he's the starter. So that was the signal that the Sam Howell thing is real. They're going to give him every opportunity to start. And, you know, then they've gone ahead and absolutely followed through on that and named him the starter. But that, as a concept, almost never exists anymore. This idea of taking this fifth round pick and voluntarily deciding he's going to be the starter going forward, having seen basically nothing from him, you know, preseason a year ago, and then one game at the ass end of the season, enough to declare that they're going to be going with him. And then you've got the further sort of complicating element of it that, yes, he was a fifth round pick. Nobody's entirely sure why, you know? Okay, it was a bad quarterback draft class, but nobody was looking at that group saying, you're going to get Desmond Ridder or whoever. These guys are going to be third round picks, which itself was like a round or two lower than people were expecting them to go.
For sure.
They're going to be third round picks. And Howell is the guy who's going to fall to the fifth, to like deep into day three. You know, you go back a year ago and people were talking about him, or a year previous to the draft, people were talking about him as not just a first rounder, but maybe the number one overall pick. So he has tools, which is something you don't necessarily see in typical fifth round picks. It's just, I've been fascinated from day one to see what materializes out of giving a guy like him the chance.
Yeah, and so again, I think overall, for whatever it's worth, on Monday Night Football against the Ravens, the great vaunted preseason Ravens, Sam Howell looked pretty good, right? A couple of the negatives that you said, worked through his progressions more than he has in the past, and threw the ball effectively. So yeah, it is, it's almost time, man. It's almost time for the season. Are you ready? I mean, I get excited for preseason football, but there's definitely a point in the middle of the preseason where I'm like, I want to see the starters. I can't wait to watch 60 minutes of a full game with all the starters.
Yeah.
Are we there?
So this week was generally the week where you see a bit more of the starters. Next week's where it starts to drag. Because now, like, next week is the traditional, let's not play anybody of consequence. And that's the week where you get into it and you're like, this is getting kind of old. Let's see regular season football now.
Full disclosure, we might not have an extensive recap of preseason week three next week because of that. The cut day, though, I want to talk about cut day in a minute here. But first, this season, DraftKings has launched the largest best ball tournament in DraftKings history. Right now, you can enter into DraftKings best ball tournament for a shot at over $10 million in guaranteed cash prizes. Make your entry into the draft today. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the NFL season without having to worry about managing your roster, waiver wires, and more. Start playing best ball. Download the DraftKings app using code PFF. Enter DraftKings Best Ball Millionaire Contest and then snake draft your team for the season. Each week, you'll automatically rack up points from all your top scorers. No ads, no drops, no trades. No, I should have played him instead. Teams with the most points by the end of the season, we'll have a shot to take home the $1 million top prize. So what are you waiting for? Head to the DraftKings app and sign up with code PFF. Start playing best ball today. Join the DraftKings $10 million best ball tournament only on DraftKings with code PFF. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Age and eligibility restrictions apply. Void where prohibited. See DraftKings.com for details. One thing that's different this week, Sam, this year, is cut day. There is one cut day, and it's next Tuesday afternoon, I believe. So after all of the action, I believe there's one island game. You talk about the game that nobody's really going to care about. Texans Saints play Sunday night. Island game, every other preseason's done. Every fan is just ready for the season. And we're just going to crank out one more game for you guys. College football's got week zero, like a lot happening this weekend. But next week, there is only one cut day. And that's going to be nuts because it used to go from 90 to 75. And then you'd go from 75 down to 53. We're going for all the way down to 53 in one swoop. What I'm interested in is over these next couple days, first off, there are trade rumors. We'll talk about Jonathan Taylor in a minute. Are there going to be more trades? Or are we going to see teams do a solid for some of the veterans? We've seen that in the past where there's a veteran who's still a good player, just depth chart issues or finances, whatever it might be, within a team, isn't going to play. They want to release him. Are they going to wait till cut day? So I think as of recording time right now, Wednesday, as you're hearing this on Wednesday, no big news along those lines, but I wonder over the next few days if we're going to hear more veteran movement, bigger names starting to get cut, and then names hit the waiver wire who, you know, could help shore up some holes for some other teams.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of movement to be done at the bottom end of the rosters when it comes to trades, you know, understanding who's likely to get released, teams trying to jump to the front of the queue, trying to avoid claims, you know, the claim order and that kind of thing. So we talk, you know, there's plenty of those guys. You're probably going to see a few trades, you know, done just to avoid those kind of frenzied attempts to claim people. There'll definitely be some movement. And then you get to the bigger names of guys like Jonathan Taylor and whether that's going to materialize or not.
All right. So again, as of recording time right here, Jonathan Taylor, still a Colt. But he's been
given permission to seek a trade.
And then I liked the quote from Adam Schefter, if the value's right. So, of course, I pose the question, what's
the value?
What's the value there?
Well, so it 100% hinges on what is Jonathan Taylor willing to do in terms of playing this year, right? So obviously, Jonathan Taylor wants a new contract. Colts don't want to give him a new contract, or at least not yet. And that's where we have an impasse. So the value for Jonathan Taylor changes dramatically depending on whether or not that's the same deal everywhere else, right? Like if Jonathan Taylor is willing to play this year and then get franchise tagged, then actually you could trade a reasonable amount for that, right? That's 2 years of a potentially elite top tier running back at a cost control price. That has quite a good value to a lot of teams. If, however, Jonathan Taylor's like, no, I want a giant new contract. I want him top of the market money. He's worth nothing. Like nobody wants to pay that. The Colts don't want to pay that. That's why they're letting him seek a trade. So if that's the deal, I'm not saying yes to anything unless I get a new top of the market money. I don't see how a team is trading for him.
Reportedly, the Colts want something similar to what the 49ers got for Christian McCaffrey.
Right.
A lot of draft picks.
Good luck.
It was not a first rounder, but it was what, 2, 3, 4? It was a bunch of draft picks for Christian McCaffrey. We're coming off an offseason, not to beat a dead horse here, but we've said for years, we've discussed a lot for years as far as the running back value and decreased value, and they're the most replaceable position. They're very talented, but it doesn't always show up in production, that whole spiel. But this was the biggest tipping point in recent years. No matter how many times we had said that or other people had said that or even a few teams had shied away from either big running back contracts, second contracts, or high draft capital being used on running backs, it was never the entire league like this year. But this year we see a Josh Jacobs, we see Saquon Barkley, neither guy getting a big long-term contract as a free agent. And the only thing that we did see maybe contrary to the running back value thing, was two running backs drafted in the top 12,
right?
Bijan Robinson and Jahmyr Gibbs. I think you can explain that away with Bijan being as special as it gets as a prospect over the last 8 to 10 years, and maybe just the draft lacking blue chip talent. So by the time you get to 12, it's Gibbs. I guess my point is, there's never been a time in the league where almost everyone seems to be on the same page as far as running back value. Now, again, last year, middle of the season, Niners give up a ton for Christian McCaffrey. Is there another team that would be willing to do that? And is it a 2-3-4? Or is it legitimately, at this point, for one more year of Jonathan Taylor, it's a 3. And giving up a 3, if you're a team like the Eagles, I know they've got a loaded backfield and they'll be fine. But if you're a team that's close or on the cusp or certainly competitive, is a 3 worth it for Taylor? As you said, you can get into franchise tag territory.
Yeah, I mean, the one kind of caveat is, look, I don't think many people saw the Christian McCaffrey trade coming. So there's always the potential that there's a team out there that reads it different from everybody else. But I don't see how a large amount of trade collateral coincides with the contract that has to be given up if Jonathan Taylor isn't willing to play the last year of his deal and then a potential franchise tag at the back end of that, which he probably isn't, because otherwise we wouldn't have a problem in Indianapolis in the first place. So I just can't see those two things coexisting, a team being willing to give up both the contract that he wants and the trade collateral that the Colts are going to want. I don't see how those two things exist at the same time.
No,
don't see it.
I'm looking through teams here just to try to get an idea of who might actually be interested in Jonathan Taylor.
I think plenty of teams would be interested if he was willing to play the last year of his deal and then you can franchise tag him. But if that's not the case, like if he's saying, look, I want this deal, like this is why we have a problem in the first place.
I don't see anybody doing the deal. No.
That's what I'm saying.
I don't see anybody doing the deal because nobody got like comparable running backs. And I'll say this, of Jonathan Taylor, Josh Jacobs and Saquon Barkley, I think Taylor's had a better season. 2 years ago, Taylor was the best of the three. Taylor wasn't as good last year and was banged up. Josh Jacobs was probably the best of the three. Saquon Barkley's had years that were as good as those other guys. Like, there's no definitive, this guy's better than that guy. And Barkley and Jacobs, again, they're sitting there dealing with franchise tags and slight adjustments off that.
And, by the way, are theoretically available for the same kind of deal, right?
Right.
So all three of those guys have been unhappy with their contract situation this season. Any of the three could have been traded. Like, they could have tagged either one of those guys, Jacobs and Saquon, and traded them away if a team was willing to give up that kind of contract. But nobody is. So Saquon had to sign for like $900,000 extra in incentives or whatever, or guaranteed money rather, and the potential incentive to get a little bit higher, effectively nothing to show up early for training camp. And Jonathan Jacobs is, Josh Jacobs is looking like he's going to lose a stare down with the Raiders and have to report before, you know, the start of the season anyway, and just sign the franchise tag and be out whatever the amount of fine money is, like $1 million. So if teams were willing to give up that kind of contract, it would have happened already with one of those guys and they would have been traded. On the other hand, you've got a guy like Dalvin Cook, who's in that same kind of bucket, albeit with a bit more mileage on the clock. Vikings get rid of him. I mean, there were interested teams, but it's not like everybody was breaking down his door, throwing a giant contract at him. Like, he signed a relatively modest deal to go play for the Jets.
I think this is slightly different. I mean, Taylor, I will say, I think as a pure runner, Taylor's probably right up there with Nick Chubb, Derrick Henry, maybe. Just pure runner. I think when you add McCaffrey, what McCaffrey does out of the backfield, Jacobs is probably up there as well. What Saquon can do out of the backfield, it puts them in a different category. Not necessarily better, but I'm almost ranking them differently. But Taylor's probably a top 3 to 5 pure runner. Scheme agnostic, can run gap, downhill, outside, zone, whatever it might be. I think that's a little different than Dalvin Cook. You know, I mean, you've got a guy in his prime. Sure, he's coming off injury, but in his prime. So which teams, if we're not doing the long-term deal, some of the teams that come to mind, I mentioned the Eagles way back when mm-hmm. they first started these trade talks, if they wanted to be, you know, they're super cheap right now at the running back position. If they really wanted to do that, he'd have the opportunities. The Baltimore Ravens, instead of relying on an oft-injured J.K. Dobbins, who's great when he's healthy and is just hurt quite a bit, the Ravens are going to run the ball a lot. I think you mentioned the Cowboys last time we were playing this game here. Despite having the Lightning and Lightning, Deuce Vaughn and Tony Pollard, do they want some thunder in Jonathan Taylor? Those teams who feel like they are going to be competitors and in the Super Bowl mix, intriguing, maybe one-year rental for Jonathan Taylor, if the price is right. And the price, if it was a three, maybe consider something like that.
That's the thing. If he's willing to play on that kind of deal, half the league becomes on the table because it's worth the shot for anybody that thinks they're going to be competitive, particularly in this AFC where everybody's amazing and you're like, what can separate us from the other 8, 9, 10 teams that are going to be contending as well? So like the teams we mentioned, but like...
Dolphins?
Yeah, Dolphins, could be like in there. Patriots.
Is Jonathan Taylor in his high 4.3 speed, is that too slow for the Dolphins? he ran a 4.39. That might be too slow for that Dolphins offense.
Yeah. Equally, though, he brings something very different to that backfield.
Oh, absolutely. Really,
like, but if that was the kind of arrangement, I think half the league would be at least intrigued by potentially giving that up. But I don't think it will be. I don't see how it could be.
Any other teams that come to mind? Those are all the teams that probably think that they're close.
Yeah.
Or just going to be extremely competitive and maybe have the opportunity in the backfield. With the Saints, maybe? I doubt it. They bring in Jamal Williams. You have Alvin Kamara there, but Kamara's dealing with a suspension. Maybe the Saints, though, could be a team. I don't know. Those are the teams that jump out to me as far as Jonathan Taylor. We'll see. Any other takes on Taylor?
Just that I still don't really see it happening.
The fallback is he goes to the Colts and we get to see him and Anthony Richardson in the same backfield. Yeah. And I'm still intrigued by that. Plus an offensive line, as we've said over and over here, should be much better.
And if you look at from his point of view, right? I mean, he wants his new contract. He wants it now. If he's not getting it now, the next best option is where can I have the best contract year and, you know, increase my value rather than decrease it this season.
Is Philly or Baltimore.
Yeah, is effectively all he can do. So Philly, Baltimore, but also potentially one of those offenses like Indianapolis or Chicago where, you know, the quarterback is going to change the dynamic and you have extra production because of that. So staying in Indy, I don't think is the worst thing he could do.
All right, I'm going to run around the league real quick here.
Run around the league.
We're going to run around the league.
Okay.
Some notes, some news and notes. Seahawks rookie wide receiver Jaxon Smith-Njigba has wrist surgery, which sounds bad, but he could be back for the start of the season, which is in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
We talked about him the other day, that really nice deep crossing route and what he can bring to that Seattle offense. So something to keep an eye on there. The Bucs officially named Baker Mayfield as their starting quarterback over Kyle Trask. Mm. That was somewhat expected, as expected, hashtag as expected. And the Cardinals have not named a starting quarterback for Week 1 against the Commanders. Underdog Fantasy's own Colt McCoy and Clayton Toon are still in the mix there.
I don't see what's the downside of playing Clayton Toon from day one. I don't see how's it bad. There's all you can do is gain insight into whether Clayton Toon is one of those guys, right? Is he better than he was given credit for when he slipped to where he was drafted? Why not give him a shot? If it doesn't work out, you stink and you're improving your draft position anyway. Like it's win-win. There's no downside.
One other thing I wanted to throw out there, our friend Mike Renner, who we just realized is right down the street here in Nashville. Yeah. We invited him to podcast.
But he's doing yoga instead.
But he's at yoga right now. So thanks, Mike. We was going to make his triumphant return to the PFF NFL podcast, but he's doing hot yoga outside here in the 100-degree heat in Nashville.
You could easily do hot yoga just by stepping outside of the building. It is hot as balls here.
Yeah, you step outside, touch the ground, stand up, done. Hot yoga.
Yeah.
It's hot down here.
It's rough.
It's hot everywhere across the country right now. He mentioned the other day, it was almost like, I think Mike's been known to take a few shortcuts in his life, you know? He admitted some, even right here on the podcast, how he cheated to get his job at PFF.
Yeah.
He cheated. It's even in the PFF book.
Is it really?
How he cheated. But now it doesn't matter. I mean, he's in. And he's good. Mike's very talented. But his whole Twitter timeline yesterday was almost like he was watching our show. He's over there saying Josh Jones should get traded. Trey Tomlinson's a baller. It's almost like he's copying our whole shtick here. Just watch the podcast and turned it into all of his content. But again, Josh Jones, the Arizona Cardinals tackle, who's had a really good preseason, had a really good third year in the league, which was last year, for teams like the Jets or the Bills, maybe dealing with some offensive line issues, will Josh Jones get traded? The other name that keeps popping up is a guy who's my age, our age.
Wow.
41-year-old Jason Peters.
Damn it, that's right. I'm the same age as you again.
You are. You're back to being 41 here, the same age as me. 41-year-old Jason Peters, same draft class, Sam, 2004. He wants to play football still, coming off a year where he was with the Cowboys for 268 snaps and a 70 grade. Jason Peters has had times as a, you know, in his late 30s and into his 40s where he doesn't move as well as he used to.
Mm.
But he's still out there with a 70 grade last year, 77 in 2021. Even when it looks like he might be losing it a little bit, Jason Peters has been pretty productive.
He's still solid. I mean, there's definitely a lot worse left tackles out there than Jason Peters right now. Now, he's also one of these guys that a little bit like Teron Armstead, you've got to budget in, miss time, you know?
There was that scare the other day. I think he's going to be okay. Teron Armstead, by the
Dude,
way.
Dude, did you see what he said at the end of that?
What?
So, you know, he did whatever he did and he missed some time. And one of his teammates was like, all right, you know, you're going to be, he's like, I'm good. I'm just old. He's like 32 years old or 34, whatever the hell he is.
He's not even that old, is he?
He's whatever he is.
He was class of 20.
32, yeah.
14.
So he's like, no, 13. Don't worry. I'm just old. I'm like, dude, oh God, if a 32-year-old is like, I'm old as hell.
Dolphins should be thinking about the future there.
That's bad.
Yeah, class of 2013. Armstead's fun to watch.
You're graying from the neck up, right?
What do you mean? I don't see grays here. Don't see what you're seeing.
You also don't. The beard is a lot tighter than it used to be back when it was the same color.
What do you mean?
If you grew out the stubble to the length it used to be, I think you might need some more pepper in this. No, salt in the pepper.
There might be more salt showing up.
But
what's your point?
My point is that I've discovered like rogue gray hairs across my body, like on the arm or on my chest, and it's.
Yeah.
So turning 40 or whatever didn't really affect me. You know, it's just like age is a number. Finding gray hairs, though, is like that's my body shutting down. Like it's dying bit by bit, follicle by follicle. My body is now dying.
That's one way of putting it. Yeah.
Right. It's the way I'm looking at it.
It's twilight years for you, man.
It's starting to concern me. That's, by the way, like leaving out the fact that the top of it just died en masse and left.
I don't think people wanted to play the game, but I liked playing the game. The last time the Ravens lost a preseason game, here's what was going on in the world.
I had hair.
You had hair.
And an Irish accent.
Yeah. Patrick Mahomes was battling Davis Webb for the starting job at Texas Tech.
Starting job at Texas Tech.
Yes.
Yeah.
No one until Monday night had ever TikToked a Ravens preseason loss. No one had ever TikToked about it.
True.
Now maybe they have.
Uh-huh.
So there was a lot of, you know, first time since type of deals the other night. You had fewer gray hairs.
I don't think I had any back then.
Probably none back then.
And I actually had hair, you know? Somebody tweeted that montage of, that wasn't the first game, the whatever, 2008 Saints Chargers game from London, right?
Mm.
The highest scoring London game ever, maybe? And at the end of the game, Drew Brees takes an intentional safety, right? Where he runs out of the back, or runs towards the back of the end zone and throws the ball away. Where he actually threw the ball was at my face.
He threw it at you?
Yes. As the lone, and you see it in the video, there's one camera guy sitting behind the hoarding in the middle of the end zone, nothing else there, right? The ball goes right at my face. There's
you
no
were
way
on
he
TV?
Didn't aim it. So I was like, fun fact. I was the photographer in the end zone that had the ball thrown right at his head by Drew Brees.
I didn't know that.
But the other thing from that video is you see, again, full head of hair.
I didn't know you were famous.
Yeah.
Good for you. That's awesome.
I tweeted it. It's out there. You can see it on my...
Yeah, I want to go check it out.
On my ex.
My ex. At @PFF_Sam on the...
On X.
App formerly known as Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
At @PFF_Steve. Follow me. I'm more active now.
Yeah, you're back Xing.
Back Xing. My top five tweet was talking about my 3-year-old peeing his pants in front of the football games the other night.
That was a good one, yeah.
That was a legit conversation I had with him. I said, he's dancing, he's running around in a circle. I said, Toby, you have to go potty. He says, no, I'm watching football.
Ah.
2 seconds later,
and you were like,
soaked.
Been there.
Yeah.
Done that.
Got to watch it. Look, preseason action is on. Can't miss it.
I get it.
cannot miss it. But those are the types of things I'm bringing to the table.
Appreciate his
on the X. Be sure to follow us. Have we dragged this on long enough? How long have we been going, Tyler?
That's a good question.
Not an hour. Certainly not an hour.
39 minutes.
Jeez, man. 30. We're long-winded for everything else except random preseason news. I brought up Jason Peters for a reason.
Yeah.
That's not the thing.
No, it's not. It's Cordell Patterson balling out in Tennessee.
Oh, he was so good in Tennessee. Yeah, I'm going to steal that video. I'm going to get that. Jason Peters for tackle needy teams. I know there's Bills fans who are saying, come on home, Jason. I don't know where he's going to play. Come back to Buffalo, where he was an undrafted free agent tight end for the Buffalo Bills back in our draft class of 04. I keep mentioning the Jets. Now you'd have to maybe Mekhi Becton was playing a little right tackle the other night. You'd have to say Jason Peters is better than Dwayne Brown. Don't know if that's necessarily the case right now.
Dwayne Brown looks like he's declining hard. Now, it doesn't always follow that way. You know, sometimes guys can just have a bad year in their twilight years and make it look horrific. Or, you know, Dwayne Brown may have been carrying more injuries last year than usual. Like, it looks for
it's
all the world.
It's been a couple years, though. It's been a couple years of being a little worse.
But it does look for all the world like he's falling off a cliff hard. But he might bounce back. You know, who knows?
I'm looking for other teams where it's intriguing for a Jason Peters. I don't know. Dolphins?
Yeah.
Maybe as Teron Armstead Insurance.
Yeah.
They already have Isaiah Wynn there, but left tackle and right tackle. I mean, right tackle is still kind of an issue. So, I don't know. Something to keep an eye on there as well.
You're probably not going to want to make him flip sides, though. That's a
no. I don't want to take him.
It's a Donald Penn injury waiting to happen.
I don't want that. I want left tackle insurance only, and I'm not seeing anywhere else that makes sense.
Didn't he dabble with guard a bit with Dallas?
He did. Yeah, I think he could probably hold his own at guard, but it's not ideal.
Guard thing didn't look great. I wouldn't really want him doing that.
Yeah, but I don't see anywhere else really around the league where left tackle specifically is an issue.
I mean, he feels like a guy that might wait until somebody goes down, you know, and then get signed from off the street.
Yeah.
Like, just keep himself ready until somebody needs a left tackle more acutely.
It's harder to work out at that level when you're in your 40s, too.
Yeah.
Stay in
shape.
NFL shape, I imagine.
I mean, you're getting closer to NFL shape as the
time goes by.
I am.
Thanks. Yeah. All right, I can only handle so much abuse here. Can we wrap this thing up? We're having fun, though. We're just talking ball. Tomorrow's show, we're going to get back to our previews. We're going to get back to previewing the AFC and NFC West.
The West.
Yep. Okay. That's Thursday's show. Next week, I want to do something. We'll do another preview show, our final season preview. We'll do the Souths. And then we have to have a recap. We're going to let you go. You've got some business to take care of in New York.
I got to go to a wedding.
It's a wedding.
Yeah.
We're going to have next week. This is going to be fun. Get your questions in here for Trevor Sikkema coming back for just a draft overview. Because I've been grinding some draft.
Yeah.
And he's grinding draft all year round. So we're going to do like an overview of the draft, a very high level, some of the players to watch, position groups, that type of thing. I also want to get Brad Spielberger on the show potentially, talk about cut day and the players that are available and some of the mechanics there and potential player movement and everything. So we might keep you off the hook for two shows. Get you one show and out next week so you can go to the midweek wedding.
Mm. I mean, it's a registry wedding. It's not like, you know.
Got it.
Yeah.
You don't have to explain the whole thing. It's okay.
Yeah.
I brought it up, though. Mm. All right. We good? That's it.
Podcast from a hotel?
Podcast from the hotel. Last time we did this was the Super Bowl.
It was.
Yeah.
This is a bigger room.
It is. Good work, Tyler. Good,
like
good
daytime and stuff.
Yeah.
There's a lot of benefits to this one over the last one.
Very nice. Well, we appreciate everybody for tuning in. And we'll be back again tomorrow previewing the AFC and NFC West this season.